Inasmuch as this is a silent movie, let me say that there's just a couple more minutes, and it shows a plane really being tossed in the turbulence. So just to wait a minute, we'll see the most important part of the film, I think.
Airplane than the ones we fly, and the biggest defense you've got if you've got to fly through one of these wake vortices is to have a sizable aircraft. Here you see a large plane making a flyover at a high angle of attack, that is, touching down and going around, and you'll see a 737 attempt to follow it through. I would have hated to have tried to do the same thing in the kind of aircraft we fly. Now that's a 737, which is much more resistant to the wake vortices than the smaller planes that presently have to land behind the large aircraft at Logan on the single runway 1533 under instrument conditions. If we had a separate parallel runway which could be instrumented for landing in instrument conditions, on instrument weather days, we wouldn't have to follow them in on that runway. In the next scenes, you're going to see progressively smaller planes following a C-5A, which is a large aircraft, which is an excellent generator of wingtip vortices. Here's the generator of the wingtip vortices, and you'll see airplanes deliberately flown through the flight path. The fact that it's done high in the air is only for safety. You'd get the same effect or perhaps more from the C-5A if it were down close to the ground in a landing attitude. The first plane that's going to fall is a Convair 990, which is a pretty sizable four-engine jet airplane. And he's in for a fairly rough time. I don't think anybody would want to be a passenger in this aircraft. You notice the airspeeds, 170 and 190 knots, are speeds far above the landing speeds of these aircraft, and the landing, when they're down near the landing speed, is the time when they create the maximum jet vortices. I think you'd have a lot of airsick passengers on this airplane, but it's big enough that it's able to resist the effects of the preceding plane, and that's why 1533 isn't that big a hazard to the major air carriers that use Logan. Next one, we're going to get a little smaller. We're going to go down to a DC-9 now, and you're going to see he's in for a rougher time than the Convair 990. These films aren't of quite as high a quality. They're taken with a videotape camera. So you have to bear with us a little bit on the quality of the film. But you're going to see he gets in some fairly steep turns and dives and pull-ups. Now you're going to see a smaller aircraft getting close to the size we fly, the Learjet 23. The film quality is even poorer here, but you'll still be able to see what happens to the Learjet and what's happened to a number of light planes that have tried to follow these planes into large aircraft into major airports. You can see the wings of the Learjet, and if you keep your eye on it, you'll see it has the most trouble of all. And we're getting near the end of the film. I appreciate very much your patience in letting a member of the airline industry present their needs with regard to this, just as you do. Here he gets into an uncontrollable situation where he meets a wake vortex that exceeds the ability of the aircraft to keep his wings level. And you'll get to see what that looks like if you're the pilot in the cockpit or if you're one of the passengers in the aircraft, if you go through that experience. The same thing happened to an awfully good friend of mine a few years ago while he was trying to land a plane. So I've become a real believer in jet vortices. This is an informational meeting. I appreciate the fact that you had a representative of a rather small airline speak to you, but there's more than one point of view when it comes to people proposing to enlarge an airport. The runway we're interested in is a small one. I don't particularly think it affects Revere, but it certainly affects our operation and has an awful lot to do with how safe you'll be if you fly on an executive airline aircraft in and out of Logan Airport. Thank you. Any questions here? Of executive airlines, that's right. Yes, sir, they are. It's the only airline I know that's ever worked its way out of bankruptcy. They're no longer operating under the bankruptcy code. That's right. They're in the process of paying their creditors off. Within the last couple of years. Well, within the last 6 months with regard to getting out from under bankruptcy. No, sir, I'm not. They've never paid me a penny.
You're representing the industry.
Representing the commuter airlines, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
What
so-called? It's very small. It's very small. But to some places, like New Hampshire and Vermont and Maine, it's very important. We, in terms of making Logan Airport the eighth largest airport in the world, don't have much to do about it in terms of passengers carried. The reason that we want to go into Logan, you might say, why don't we go into Hanscom, is almost all our people want to get off executive airlines from Martha's Vineyard or from Lebanon, New Hampshire, and go to Europe or go to St. Louis or go somewhere else. If we go to Hanscom, then they have to change modes of transportation, come to Logan, and take off again. Now, where our point of view is, it's not safe for us to use 1533 when there's instrument conditions, because we have to land after those other aircraft. There is a present parallel runway, but it can't be instrumented. That's right. That's right. So what you have to do is judge what the harm of that stall runway is to your community. And in terms of Revere, I don't think it affects you at all. In terms of safety, it benefits people from Martha's Vineyard, New Hampshire, and Vermont. That's my concern, is safety. Well, that's a separate issue. As long as we operate out of Logan, we want a separate runway from 1533, and our passengers want to go to Logan.
Doctor, I might be able to help on that question as to the volume of operations. In 1971, there was a little over 37,000 aircraft operations. There were several hundred thousand passengers. That's fairly significant, and it's particularly true because of the fact that in the New England area, Northeast obviously dropped a lot of its schedules to a lot of different cities, and so these airlines are picking up and providing service to these smaller communities into Boston, and whereas there used to be, say, a DC-9, there are now the Twin Otters and so forth.
My point is this. You already have a splendid small facility that exists in the South Wayland Naval Reserve. It's not that far from Boston either way.
Well, I'd like to point out...
Excuse me a second. If you care to, would you speak at the microphone so that we can have it on the tape?
Could I just mention in response to that, I'm not saying that they couldn't operate into South Weymouth, but just for your information, approximately 65% of the passengers connect with the other airlines, and almost without exception, each of the airplanes that brings passengers in has connecting traffic. Now, if they're going to connect, the only other way, obviously, would be to bring them on the ground, and that also seems to be a problem, one of access. And so, you know, some way you've got to move the people, and it seems that maybe this is one of the better ways to do it.
Would you mind giving your name? My name is John McMahon. It's McMahon. I'm a resident of Winthrop at 102 Shore Drive. And I'd like to respond to Mr. Mooney's question, at least in part, that it seems that the interfacing of the schedule of the stall airline or the commuter airline and the short-haul carrier is just a matter of scheduling. It also seems to me that you could use the existing military facilities at the South Weymouth Naval Air Station in terms of stall takeoff and landing. There's no problem there. You have the same geographic factors that are involved in getting in and out of Boston in terms of people that go to Boston. And, in fact, I've used executive probably more than I've used any of the others, flying up to Maine or New Hampshire. I admit it's the only way to get there. At times I wondered when we flew around the hills instead of going over them. But, you know, that's part of the problem. But my only point is that I suddenly see that, and I didn't realize the significance of that stall project until tonight, that it does benefit only the commuter airlines. It's an enormous economic cost, and yet there seem to be facilities that are already existing in this immediate area, particularly that South Weymouth Naval Air Station. I only offer that for your consideration.
Well, let me say this, that this has been done. We, as I mentioned before, we operate Hanscom Field, and commuter airlines have operated out there, but unsuccessfully. Each one of them have discontinued service because they, not having the opportunity to connect and have the 65% of the additional traffic, they haven't been economically been able to continue that service. So as a result, the service is not available. Now, it was pointed out, and the question was raised about the bankruptcy of Executive Airlines. They've managed to get through it. There are more commuter airlines that have not been able to make it. And I dare say that some of them that are operating into Logan today will eventually disappear. And all we're saying is that there are many people, such as yourself, that use these, have a need in the Boston area, and it is the only way, at least up to this point, that they've been able to economically viable by having the combination of the origin destination and connecting traffic.
I would agree with you in terms of Hanscom as a commuter airline site of operations, but at the same time, I totally disagree with you in terms of the availability of South Weymouth, and in fact, the commuter airline problem hasn't been applied, at least to my knowledge, to South Weymouth. And in terms of interfacing your origins and in terms of interfacing departures?
Well, actually, South Weymouth, probably as far as market is concerned, we've done quite a lot of origin destination surveys, and they're fairly comparable. South Weymouth is not a great area as far as generation of traffic. I doubt personally that it would be a stronger area than Hanscom Field. And keep in mind that we're not only talking about commuter airlines, but also general aviation type of aircraft.
Well,
and
that poses another question.
Okay.
Is there any real reason for any general aviation use of aircraft at Logan?
Well, yes, there is. I personally feel that there will be a decreasing quantity of general aviation traffic. A lot of them do connect. Also, as you know, we are not able to restrict these aircraft.
Sure.
We can't say that you can't come in. Now, when the pilot of these smaller aircraft have that option, which we cannot deny, nor does the FAA, are they in a position to deny this, they take a slot that could be used by a commercial airline aircraft. And as a result, it creates capacity problems, causes delays of the larger airplanes. Delays, again, I pointed out, result in unnecessary noise, unnecessary air pollution.
But also, isn't that a question of both the industry and the airport, or any airport operator simply going to the FAA and saying, look, you're making, by allowing general aviation, unrestricted access to our sites, you are now creating a problem. Why not shut off Logan to general aviation and at the same time relegate it to the outlying airports? And you have a number of small community airports. I can think of one, the Norwood Airport, which can handle, I believe, perhaps all of the general aviation traffic that Logan presently handles. And I'm talking in terms of the small single and twin engine aircraft.
Mm. Well,
that's a matter of lobbying with the FAA.
You know, actually, the Massachusetts Port Authority probably has had a little more experience than most airport operators on this particular subject, because we were involved in a litigation a number of years ago in 1963, and a complaint was brought by the fixed base operators, two of them, when we attempted to limit the general aviation operations at Logan. We tried to limit it to one operator, and as a result, the FAA stepped in after a hearing and required us to take on a second operator. And for a period of time, we tried to settle the suit. We had numerous meetings with the FAA. I was directly involved over a period of years, and we said that we feel that there's going to be a diminishing need. And they said, in spite of that, as long as there is the demand and the desire by these operators to come in under the grant agreements that were signed many years ago and extend for a period, each one of them, for 25 years, there is a right that they have, which the airport operator can only say or state their position that we would rather not have quite so many in there. But so far, this has never been the position taken by the FAA, and we have had no indication.
Have you ever really asked them to take that position?
Excuse me, too, gentlemen.
Sure.
This is an interesting discussion, but I wonder if we could defer it for a time until we ask.
I have one other question. One other question that presently deals.
Just so we could have Revere people finish their discussions. That's all.
With one of the points that you made in a discussion with Mrs. Mazzarella, in terms of the present traffic and aircraft types, and I think it's pages 22, 23, and 24 of your distribution, where you list aircraft types of 6 and 7 that are high bypass engine types. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you show a reduction in the volume of non-high bypass from 92% to 68%. I believe that's page 24. Am I correct?
22 and 23.
And I think that her question was predicated on those figures, that it still remains the same in terms of your 300,000 and your 500,000 units. You still have, in 1983, non-high bypass aircraft.
Yes, well, what
would be the exact number of flights that you have today, the same percentage, or the same number of flights, 300,000.
Well, I'm saying that, first of all, you don't know, when you speak of high bypass ratio engines and so forth, you're assuming that's the only way that you can meet FAR 36.
Well, that's not the strongest in the world either.
that we don't think is going to be the case, and the fact is that we know, and as a matter of fact, during the past year, we've had a number of developments that we are quite confident are going to result by 1980, a practical elimination of aircraft that are unable to meet that FAR 36 requirement.
Would you want to extend a guarantee to us that by 1980 that it will be eliminated?
Well, no, I don't think that
I'm
in a position to guarantee that.
Thank you. Would you mind giving me your name? I don't know whether the stenographer caught it.
It's John McMahon, McMahon.
Thank you. Excuse me, Ms. Mazzarella. Is there anyone from Revere who hasn't spoken as yet? We'd just like to keep it in order. If not, go right ahead, Ms. Mazzarella.
This is just on what Mr. McMahon was just discussing. You just said, Mr. Mooney, that 65% of the passengers that come into Logan are transferring to other airlines.
No, I didn't say that. I said 65% of the commuter airline passengers connect.
All right. I believe that I read somewhere in this booklet, and I can't find it right now, that Logan is primarily an origin destination airport. Now, don't those two facts disagree with each other?
No, because a commuter airline, 65% of the commuter airline traffic connects, but approximately 10% of the total airline passenger, including that the commuters, connects. So that what's happening, that indicates to us is that the people from these smaller airlines, in fact, are feeding into Logan, which is a hub, and connecting. And most of the Boston passengers, obviously, are originating or terminating their flight in Boston. So, I don't think one conflicts. The facts are that just what I stated, 65 and 10% of the total, approximately 10%.
Okay.
Is there anyone else that cares to make comment? Yes, John.
Mr. Callahan, this is a comment just on page 9. I would like to, the purposes given for this project, I would like to see them extended beyond that particular area within the airport. To eliminate a breeding ground for insects, rodents, and obnoxious odors, and to provide a more pleasing aesthetic appearance. This shouldn't be restricted just to that one area, sir. I would hope that would be an airport-wide objective. Now, just jumping back to this graph, these are short questions, so what is the left-hand column? It says operations. Are those flights?
On what page?
Page 20 and 21. Yes, 20 and 21, sir. Operations in thousands. What are those figures, 100, 200,000? Are those flights?
Well, 20.
What type of index is it, sir?
Well, on page
20.
20?
Yes, it's graphed on page 21, and it's detailed on page 20.
Those are, wait a second. This is an aircraft operation. It represents one takeoff or one landing.
I see. Mm-hmm. Okay. I would suggest, sir, that you just define that for the layman.
Okay.
It's a good idea.
Now, going to page 23... while I think of it, that plane that just went by, sir, would you call that, would it be, are we affected or unaffected by that plane that you just heard?
Well, you're obviously affected because you noticed it. I don't know how you were affected other than it interrupted your speech to some extent. It was noticeable. It's like any noise that is objectionable.
Okay. In that pamphlet, which was quoted earlier, the new school is going into an area unaffected by airplane noise.
Unaffected?
Unaffected.
Is that what it said?
Yes, sir. Now, I think it's probably on the same path as this building here on the other side of the hill. I'm just asking how you arrived at it being unaffected.
Well,
but I'm not belaboring
write it,
that, sir.
And I guess I could take some responsibility for it. But affected is a matter of degree. I don't think that, this was objectionable. The conversation did continue. What effect it would have on a schoolroom, classroom, I don't know.
I don't either know, but I just wanted to see if you had a definition, because it is put in a positive vein in that particular pamphlet, and I think it's misquoted the word. Now, going to page 24. Okay, this takeoff stage lengths in nautical miles. Are these miles? Excuse my ignorance about nautical miles, but I don't know what that means, sir.
Well, it's a mile that's a little longer than a statute mile.
Does that mean, as I read it, 72% of the planes need 0 to 500 miles to take off?
No, they travel. Stage length means the distance between the point of takeoff and the point of landing.
Mm-hmm. I'd suggest that you elaborate. Now, my last question, sir, has to do with in 1980, you will have 24% of planes in aircraft type 7. This is on page 23 and 22. What will they be servicing? If this is the Northeast, I'm asking, will they be servicing this Northeast corridor, which I would suggest that they be diverted to Hanscom? But
you're talking about 7?
Yes, sir. Aircraft type 7.
These are wide-bodied jets. High capacity. DC-10, say, runs about 250 passengers. Can carry a bit more than that. It's not a quiet airplane, but it's a quieter airplane. It really is an excellent one, at least by comparison with aircraft like the 707. Now, they are not scheduled in the Northeast Corridor. Normally, they operate best at stage lengths of 1,000, say, to 3,000 miles. Mm-hmm. Swiss Air will operate a DC-1030 series nonstop to Zurich. That's a longer range one. But we feel, as a matter of fact, that they can operate in a short-haul market. And we've asked the airlines to consider this because we think that rather than, for instance, the Eastern Airlines shuttle, rather than running one airplane to New York, followed up by maybe one or two extra sections, that they could run one airplane rather than, say, three airplanes, having the same capacity. And the obvious advantages of that are quite apparent. Mm-hmm.
So these would not be servicing the Northeast Corridor?
Well, we think that some will be, yes. As a matter of fact, it's assumed that probably at least in the Boston-Washington market, which is a little bit longer distance, will be operating.
Okay. I would like to see more of the Northeast Corridor originating and ending at Hanscom, sir. And one last question. Would the revenue generated by a plane landing at Logan be as much as a plane landing at Hanscom?
The revenue generated by an airplane is directly related to the cost of providing the facilities they use. In other words, the landing fee they pay at Logan is related to the cost. It's computed on a weight frequency basis, so that if your cost is lower at Hanscom Field to provide the runway,
that's the Massport's cost.
Yes. If the cost is lower and the volume of operations is at least comparable, computed on a weight frequency basis, then the rates would be the same. But if it's, it's hard to explain. Even though the landing area would be less or could be less expensive at Hanscom Field, if you have fewer airplanes, then it's divided among fewer customers, in effect, so that the cost per airplane could be higher at Hanscom Field than at Logan. It's a direct computation of cost of the facility related to the volume of use.
Mm-hmm. The operations.
That's right.
I see.
It's no advantage to us, if that's your possibly your point, to have them land at Logan for financial reasons, because the landing fee is computed to return the cost of the landing area. And if there are fewer operations, the rate will go up. If there is more cost of the landing area, the rate will go up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's...
No, my point was that I would like to see just Hanscom used more by airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that cares to make any further comment? It's been a very productive evening, I think. I think we've all learned something, and we certainly want to respond to the questions that have been asked. Mrs. Mazzarello, I don't think we have your address, if I may have it. Yeah, Shelley.
My name is Mr. Mazzarello. And, you know, I've just been sitting here listening to you, and some of the questions that come up, you say, well, we can't do anything about it. That's FAA's area. We try to get the airplanes to land down at Hanscom or Westover or South Weymouth. The airlines don't want to do it. So, I mean, what's the sense of having this meeting tonight? It seems like you people can do nothing. You have to check with the FHA. You have to check with the airlines. They say no. And I think this is one reason why there's a lot of people not here tonight, because they just feel frustrated. They come down here, they use you for a whipping boy for maybe an hour, 2 hours. Then we go home, and they do what they want. That's all I want to say. I think that's why there's a lot of people not here tonight.
Well, I don't know how they would anticipate what answers would be given, although I do agree with the part that sometimes we are the whipping boys. In a functional operation, which is not entirely that of the Massachusetts Port Authority. I happen to be the chairman of the Logan Airport Noise Abatement Committee, and we have meetings about once a month. People are welcome to drop in. Mrs. Zucco here is a regular attendant. And at those meetings, we try to explain what the different functions are, what the responsibility of the federal government is. As Mr. Mooney explained, the federal government is responsible for setting maximum noise limits for the new aircraft. We can't do that. It is also a federal government responsibility to concern itself with the use of aircraft revenues and passenger taxes. They are the ones that have to put funds into research. We can't do that. They are the ones that have to determine whether or not there's going to be soundproof retrofitting of the older and noisier aircraft. Yes, we are in a fairly complex function. We are the landlord, and we feel that we can exercise a certain influence in most any situation. And we do have very definite responsibilities in particular situations, and we want to exercise them. And we appreciate the fact that you people have come here and given us very pointed comments. So I think that we can do certain things, and I think as time goes on, there will be more and more input, more and more result of that input. We thank you for coming here, and if this gentleman wants to add something to the evening.
Leonard Punch, I'm a resident of Winthrop. My property's not for sale. The airport can't buy it. But over and above that, I've been to many public hearings, especially in the city of Chelsea in my youth, when they tried to drive the oil farms out of there before they were built, driving down to Quincy and Braintree. If they didn't have them in Chelsea today, there wouldn't be any city of Chelsea right now because of the tax structure. And if people want to take this port and put it down to South Weymouth or up to Bedford or down to Otis, down the Cape, we're in very serious trouble right here now in the employment field. And I don't know what the port payroll is. I mean, I'm not talking about the port itself. I'm talking about all the functions of the port. I think it'll be very serious matter to consider of the people that, in the city of Revere, East Boston, Boston, metropolitan Boston, if you're going to take and deprive these people of a livelihood. So I am supporting the Port Authority, not in anything they want to do, but in building this new facility they anticipate. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Punch. If there is no one else that cares to make comment, we want to thank you once again. We appreciate the not only your presence here, but the tenor of your comments and the consideration that you gave to us in our rather difficult function of representing all of the elements of the airport, and we will report back through the draft master plan and through the answers to specific questions. Thank you very kindly.